Welcome to the Seasoned Athlete Podcast, your home for stories, inspiration, and advice from athletes over 40. I'm your host, Robin Leggett. I'm a later in life athlete who became a roller derby skater in my 30s and a runner and obstacle racer in my 40s. Now, I'm an athletic aging coach who helps women over 40 experience the massive life benefits that come with exploring your athletic potential at any age and any fitness background. If that fires you up, keep listening. Let's do this. Loretta Claiborne is a Special Olympics athlete and a motivational speaker who shares her life story that carries a heartfelt message of acceptance and hope worldwide for people with different abilities. Loretta was born with physical and intellectual disabilities and did not walk or talk until she was 4 years old. Doctors told her mother that Loretta belonged in an institution because she would never survive in the quote-unquote regular world. Despite her different abilities, which led to years of being bullied, teased, and hostile retaliation, Loretta credits the Special Olympics as her positive force that turned her life around. Loretta has found healing and freedom through running and has completed 26 marathons, her personal best being 3:03 in the 1982 Boston Marathon. She was awarded the ESPY Arthur Ashe Award and has shared her message with world leaders like Nelson Mandela, Pope Francis, United Nations leaders, multiple U.S. presidents, and Oprah Winfrey, to name a few. So yeah, your interests are likely piqued at this point, and for good reason. Here is my conversation with Loretta Claiborne. Hi, Loretta. Are you ready to drop some seasoned athlete knowledge on our listeners today?
I sure am.
I love it. You are Loretta Claiborne. You are the Chief Inspiration Officer for the Special Olympics, and you've been a Special Olympics athlete since 1970. Am I right about that?
You're correct. Well, the chief inspirational officer role, it was just like in the last 4 or 5 years.
I got it. Got it. But you've been involved with the Special Olympics since 1970.
I've been involved with the Special Olympics since 1970. And I was a person with intellectual disability to serve on the board of directors.
Amazing. Awesome. I want to get into that and how your journey has led you here. But first, I'm going to ask you the question I ask all my guests, and that is, what is your age at this moment in time?
I happen to be 68 years old.
Yay! I happen to be 68. Do you feel 68?
And I'm still kicking.
You're still kicking. Do you feel 68?
No, I don't.
So it's almost like you have to remind yourself, like, I'm 68? Really? Let's go back in time. Were you athletic as a kid? Did you play sports when you were growing up?
Well, I grew up in the housing project, and there was no sports for girls then.
Yes.
We heard of the Olympics, and I remember seeing Wilma Rudolph run as a kid on TV, but there was no sports for kids. We played baseball and softball, and we had a park. We would go down to the park and play.
So it was like pick up sports, like...
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, in the neighborhood.
I was a champion in jacks, champion in box hockey.
Yeah, yeah. So all those like schoolyard stuff and neighborhood stuff, you just owned it.
And I was good at dodgeball in school. Actually, I never forget playing. This janitor had just done the floors and I had socks on. We all had our socks on. We were playing this dodgeball. And I was the last person in the circle, and I knew these two kids really wanted to get me. And I jumped over the ball, and then I slid, and my head hit the heating vent thing, and like the radiator, and I had a seizure. But that was the only seizure I ever had in my life.
Well, that's scary, but glad it was the only one. But that's an intense dodgeball injury, I would say. It's probably the most intense
in elementary
life. That's hardcore. I don't remember my dodgeball being quite that hardcore, but I also
we shouldn't have been playing in our socks.
We played outdoor on blacktop in shoes.
Yes.
That's what I remember. But yeah, playing inside in socks, probably not the wisest decision. But you know, back then, I don't think safety was like the number one thing.
No. How many times have I gotten kicked in martial arts in the head?
Right.
Shake it off and then you sit out a bout and then you get back up and he calls you back up and you spar. And I remember I having the wheelhouse kicking to the head.
Yeah.
And get back up.
They were like, shake it off, get back up, get back in there. It's like today the kid would be pulled, taken to the hospital.
I wish we knew then what we know now.
About concussions? Yes.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the story, my brother started running. He was in high school. And of course, he had his friends. And my brother Hank was popular. Hank was the short name. His real name was Henry. But everyone calls him Hank the Tank. Popular. And he was a state champion cross country. And he was a state champion track and wrestling. So he'd bring the guys in the summer, getting ready for the fall. He would bring these hurdles. They would go down to the smallest field. We used to call it the metal field. Bring these hurdles up, and him and his friends would run around and go around the hurdles. Of course, me being a child who was slow and didn't have, you know, the ability to keep up. And of course, my sisters and them were playing dolls, and they had their friends and da 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 da. So I kind of like buddied around the house, and I would see my brother and them out running, and I would just go over to where those guys were and run around the field following them. And my mother one day says, you don't need to be with those boys. But she knew where I was at. And she knew that Hank was kind of the leader. So she knew nothing would happen to me. And at the age of 12, I started running. And I would run around the Parkway Projects. And the rule was I could not leave the projects. So I would run all the pavements. And I would come back down these streets and come back. And then I would make this one turn, and somebody said to my mother, I saw Loretta on Pershing Avenue. And my mother looked at me, and she started to get strapped. I said, but Pershing Avenue, the projects is on, part of the projects is on Pershing Avenue.
I like it. You were pushing your limits, but you knew. You knew what was, like, yeah, what was within the
bounds. I had that down pat.
Yeah.
And then I was only 12, going on 13, and then I kept it up. And of course, back then, it wasn't the things for girl to run. That was a no-no. I mean, my mother even looked at me and says, I don't want you to grow up looking like a boy. I don't want you to have muscles. I don't want you. But you know what? I didn't have many friends. So I took solace in running. I looked at my brother. And I kind of wanted to be like him. So I kept running around the projects. And then I got older. We went to high school. There was no girls track team. I remember playing basketball half court. If you were a female, you could not play full court basketball. We had these skirt gym suits on. They were awful. And I remember playing half court basketball. So when I got into like 10th grade, there was a revolution going on in the country. The riots just stopped. And girls were getting more vocal. Women were getting more vocal about their rights. Blacks were getting more vocal. But being a child who was in total special education class, we weren't looked at. We weren't thought about. So these girls wanted to start a track team. And they knew that I ran because they would see me running. And they said, hey, let's get the girl from special ed. She's always running. We'll get her to get the principal to sign the paper and go around to the teachers at lunchtime. And they did. They tricked me. We had to raise money for the track team, which was a student activity. So they sold candy bars, and I sold more than anyone in the school. And then I was gypped out of that because they wanted a regular ed student to win. But the whole school booed this person who won, who happened to be my friend. And he didn't sell one candy bar. His mother did. But getting back to the track, finally, I would go around, get the teachers to sign. And finally, I had to take the paper to Mr. Eckenrode. And Mr. Eckenrode says, yeah, you girls can run, but you're only allowed to run in the halls after school.
Jeez. And you know what's interesting? Because we're talking about the 60s, right? Like
we're talking about the late 60s, 70s.
Talking about the late 60s and 70s, that's not that long ago.
No, I graduated in 72.
Yeah, so. It's not that long ago that girls were not allowed to run, that your mom had all these misconceptions about what would happen to you if you ran. And, you know, I interviewed Catherine Switzer for this podcast, and she's known as the first woman.
I remember when she ran the Boston,
Marathon.
Sweatsuit.
Yeah. And that was the story where it's like, I wasn't allowed to do this. They thought that my uterus was going to fall out if I ran.
That's
like,
what my mom thought.
Yeah. And it's like, when you think about it, was it that you're thinking it should be like the early 1900s or even farther back? It is the 1960s. It's not that long ago that
I started running in 66. And then, you know, this is 69, 70. The next year they decided you girls can run in the hallway. And then the principal, the girls really went to bat, and we all got together and we walked down to the smallest field, what we called the metal field, and the guys were running. And us girls were just standing there waiting for them to get finished. We didn't say anything to the principal. Then we all gathered around the track. I don't think we ever got to run, but I remember some kids picking on me. And my cousin, Pierre Ritter, said, "You know what? I'm tired of y'all messing with her. We're going to have her run a mile against you." Well, here's these big black guys who could really run a 12-minute 100-yard dash at the time. That was a good time back then. 12 seconds.
I was going to say 100-yard dash.
100-yard dash, because it wasn't meters then.
Yeah, yeah.
Or all 400-yard dash track. So my cousin got mad, and he had me run a mile against these guys. First lap, I started looping them. Then my cousin said, I guess my cousin showed you, you know, I had never had no problem out of those guys. So then the girls in our 12th year, the teacher had gotten permission to take us to see a track meet up in New Cumberland, at New Cumberland High School. And I remember going to watch the meet. We had a bad storm that weekend, and one of the coaches noticed us girls in the stand. There was no uniforms. There was no York High uniforms. We just had whatever we had on. I had on Tommy Can shoes.
Wow, I have not heard that name in a long time.
Yes. They were black, and they had a white ball like across the top of the toe, and they were fast for me. And I remember, comes over to Mrs. Kasiba, who was our coach. And she said, "You know, I see your girls." And she says, "Well, they can't run because we're only here to watch. We don't have a program." Well, they wanted to fill the lanes up. So they asked us if we could run in the 4x100. So all of a sudden, all the girls says, "Well, we don't want no retards on this team." And Mrs. Kasiba turned around and looked at the girls and said, "Loretta's going to participate. If it wasn't for Loretta, y'all wouldn't be here. It was Loretta that broke her back to sell candy bars, to get the principal, to get me to do this. Loretta's going to run." So I should have ran the anchor because I had the fastest time. But those girls didn't want me to run the anchor, so they put me in first, which is usually a slower runner.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, I'm running. I had the baton. I passed the baton to the girl. She grabs it. She passes it to the next one. And our third leg person dropped the baton.
Oh.
Yeah. So we graduated. In our yearbook, there's a picture of me and the girls. And I was just totally hating those girls. There was one or two girls I really liked on the team that treated me like I was a value. You know, I still have that picture to this day.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And that was the start of my running. And then between that time, I never forget them. The counselor at the workshop says, "Hey, I see you running back and forth to the workshop. You can get the free bus pass." You know, our clients have free bus passes on the bus. Well, I didn't want to ride the bus because I was always getting in trouble. Somebody would make a smirk and then I would have an outburst. So I just decided, I can run to work. Nobody's going to smell me because I'm going to be stinky and smelly anyway. At the workshop, you know, you worked with stuff for the war. And you always came home. They told you not to wear your best clothes. And the girls up front, they always would dress up and have their clothes on. But I always worked in the back. And there I was And I come home, my shirt was, just wash it. And it still, you could see the stain. So I just repeated the clothes because I don't want my clothes to be nasty. And they told us, if you're working in production, you're going to get dirty. So then I got in a fight one day, and Mr. Lee Gilry, who was our counselor, came out and says, Loretta, I have something for you this evening. Well, that morning he told me to go up and get a sandwich. And I said, no, thank you. And he looked at me, he said, Miss Claiborne, he would always call me Miss, and I hated that. And I said, could you please call me Loretta? You can call everybody else by their first name. So he says, Loretta, I want you to have a sandwich. I said, no, thank you. And I remember my mom says, don't ever take anything because nothing's free in this world. I want you to leave my house. I want you to go to that workshop. I want you to work on an odd week. Then you go to school. You don't take nothing from nobody in school. You don't take nothing from nobody at the workshop. Well, he was a counselor. So I took the sandwich. And I knew I couldn't eat pork and beef because I have a dietary problem. It makes, I can't digest it. So I took this peanut butter and jelly sandwich. We call them choke sandwiches. I ate it. And that night I got called into his office and everybody was like saying, yeah, she's out of here. I said, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm gonna be out here and I'm going to school. I ain't gonna even look back. But here he gave me a paper and he wanted me to join Special Olympics. And I looked at the paper, I picked it up and I looked at it and I could read the word Olympics. I said, Mr. Gilreath, here, you can. I can't take this. He says, I want you to have it. I want you to take this home and tell your mother. I will call her. So I folded the paper up, put it in my pocket. I got home. My mother was sitting there playing cards with some friends. I took the paper out of my pocket. I said, that's right, because I know he's going to call her. I handed her the paper, and she was sitting at the table. And she says, I don't have no money for this. I got two kids in drum corps. I got to buy boots, and I got to buy bucks for Alan. Bucks are shoes that you march in. And the girls wore like horse boots. They were white. And the lady next to her said, Miss Claiborne, Rita, why don't you let Loretta in here? It's free. Loretta doesn't have nothing. Your other kids are in this and in that. You have your kids in the drum corps. I know you're big in the drum corps. She says, why don't you let Loretta have some things? They're going to take care of the workshop. Well, I thought she threw the paper away. That Saturday, get up. You choice word, get your butt out of this house. Take another free sandwich with somebody. Uh-huh. Get your butt out
now, of this now house. It's get the free sandwiches.
Yeah, that's how he got me. I said, but it's raining out in this stuff. I don't give a, you know what? You're going to get out of here. And when you come home, I want you to have them get ready to clean them bathrooms and get them clothes hung up. Your clothes is going to be waiting. Because we had five girls. And the boys seemed like they almost did nothing. Us girls on Saturday, we had chores.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, the gender rules, right?
The gender rules. I came home that day. Mr. Lee Gilry gave me a ride home. She says, well, how was the Special Olympics? I said, it was okay. And she said, good. I said, I quit. She said, what did you say? I said, I quit. I said, I do karate and I'm doing that on Saturdays. I'd rather stick to karate. I'm quitting. She said, you don't quit nothing in my house. You understand? If you're quitting, you'll always be quitting. You'll always quit in life. And she was right.
You know, it seems like you've had some really important people show up at the right time and be in your corner. And I noticed that you remember their names. You don't forget the names of the people who showed up for you.
Nope. And I don't forget the Joy Johnson and all those girls' names.
Yep. 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 It's like your mom who once told you not to run because, you know, who knows what was going to happen.
Maybe she would say, okay, that's all right. You tried it. And in karate, and I thought if she's going to be upset about anything, was that I joined karate. And I mean, if you're going to be boyish, karate would be the thing. And then many women didn't do martial arts. Because I started it out as a class for self-defense for women. And I'll never forget it. I was doing... Then they called it slimnastics. And then they changed from slimnastics to aerobics. Remember the aerobics?
slim and I'm still stuck at slimnastics. Like I didn't know they called it that.
And exercises were awful. The pelvic thing. We all down the gym, make sure no men are looking in the window.
Right. It's like, yeah, nobody knew what to do with women for the longest time. And then, of course, I remember aerobics. Of course, I grew up in the 80s, so I remember aerobics. So you did the Special Olympics. I take it you ran in the Special Olympics. What did you do specifically?
It was funny because I would run around the projects just like nobody's business. Our projects are still there, and it's a couple miles around that project. So, you know, it's on at least if you run the right roads on the out of that project, you get well over a mile, almost 2 miles. And I would just run the projects every evening. And then, you know, I'd take a break because then I knew I had karate one night. You know, I had karate Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Or I'd just run around one loop. But it was amazing that then women were told, this is not what you do. When I started karate, I remember going to a tournament. My sensei took us to a tournament. I was the only girl. And we went to this tournament. It was huge. And there was no place for the girls to get dressed. It was all for the males. So I got slick. When I would go, I would take a shirt and have a t-shirt, a white t-shirt under my shirt. And then I would take my shirt and slip the long sleeve. And then had the shorter sleeve on and then put on my gi. And I always made the shorter shirt was big, so it went over my little undies. And then slip on my gi pants first and then do that. And then tie my obi, which is your belt, and then I would compete.
You know, girls and women, I think it's universal. We've all become very good at clandestine clothes changing.
Yes. Yes.
We're like, I'm in public, I have nowhere to go, I'm going to somehow completely change out of one thing.
Girls were like, yeah, second fiddle. Like people look around, those guys that look around the room, what are you doing here, you know? And still today, if you even look back then when there was nothing offered for girls, here we're watching the NBA, the basketball, and the WNBA, and here the athletes, it might have been the Olympics. It was one of those big competitions. It was this happened this late.
Oh, March Madness, where they had the gyms.
Yes.
It was March Madness.
Yes.
And the
March
men
Madness.
Had this like really nice gym set up, and the women.
And girls had a couple of little weights.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's 2021. Yep. It's still happening.
What's wrong with this picture?
Right. It's still a problem. It's still happening. We have wage inequality in sports, like the women's soccer teams and the WNBA versus the NBA.
There again, the women's soccer team. And guess what? What's really sad about that is the women are playing better than the men.
They're playing better. Yeah. Yeah. And so we still have so much work to do, and it's really frustrating. It's angering, yes. You know?
Well, I get mad at Special Olympics because they focus more on the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember speaking at Special Olympics because we have what they call the young athletes, which used to be called Let's Play and Grow back in the 80s. And they revised the program, went dormant for a while. Now they have young athletes, and that's children 2.5 to 7. It's supposed to instill them into play and coordination and get to play with regular kids, no competition. Then we have the traditional at 8 and beyond. Well, all the focus is on the young athletes and the younger athlete. And my biggest pet peeve of Special Olympics is, look, you have athletes who are older.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do a marketing campaign, you talk about our athletes. Our athletes who are older, you should provide programs and give them the same structure as you give the younger athlete. Our athletes are athletes, period.
Right.
69 or 9, you're in.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop. and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand, and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, and that's important. I feel like you've spent your life as an advocate, whether you've known it or not. You've always had to fight for your position, for yourself, for your teammates. And now, it's like ingrained in you and instilled in you. And so now now it's time to, you know, it's like we still have sexism. It's very clear that that's still a problem, but ageism is also a problem. And that's a huge problem. Yeah. And people don't, you know, the same issues or similar issues that people had around women doing, you know, running or doing strength training or aggressive sports. That's, you know, there's a little bit of that, not as obvious as it was in the 60s and 70s. But that is now transferred to older people, to older women specifically, that, you know, once you reach a certain age, certain things are not accessible for you anymore, or you shouldn't do them, or it's going to be dangerous, you're going to hurt yourself, all of which is not true.
You're going to have high blood pressure, you're going to have heart attacks.
Yeah, you're going to hurt yourself, you're going to break a bone, whereas in reality, doing these types of activities actually strengthens your body, actually builds muscle mass in a time when it would otherwise decline, you know, that actually staves off these illnesses.
And I know that's true, because I once in a while I'll hit something in the pavement and I'll trip. I never break nothing. I still figure skate. And I fell on the ice, and it's funny, people laugh. They says, I never seen nobody fall like you.
Well, you're like, I've been doing this all my whole life.
Well, I took judo.
Yeah, yeah.
I took. So, and I knew how to fall, but
yeah,
still
didn't take a fall.
My age, I have friends who just trip and they broke bones.
Yeah, they'll break a hip. Yeah.
Break bones. I said, no. Now, in my hand, if you look at my hands, I've broken a lot of bones in this one hand, but that's martial arts.
Right, right.
All the years of breaking boards and bricks and punching people. But other than that, I never broke no major bones.
Yeah. I've been lucky too. I'm fortunate. But yeah.
You can see these things right here. I think that's just from, I've been knitting a lot, and I've been knitting preemie hats and the knitted knickers.
You have so many talents.
So, and I make them to give to hospitals and cancer centers.
Great. That's so wonderful.
But I've been knitting so much over the pandemic, because at night you want to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you want to do something. So
yeah, now I want to do something.
Mm-hmm. So I want to transition into the marathons, because after your Special Olympics experience, you started getting into marathon running, because this is now a thing you can do. Whereas when you were younger, it was like, as we discussed, it was not a thing you could do.
I ran not long after Rosie Wu-Wez. Remember her?
I'm not familiar, but
she was the one that got on a bus or something, and she ended up running the end of the marathon, and she got caught.
Oh yeah. Okay. I think I've heard her story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what led you to run your first marathon, and what was that experience like?
My friend, Bob Hollis, his wife and I are still best friends. They used to have these little track meets in the summer here through the organization called the Crispus Attucks, the community center. So he used to put on these track meets, and they would have, you know, from the very small distances on up to the mile, 2 mile, to 3 mile. And I remember one year seeing Kim Gallagher. She was just a kid come there, and she ended up in the Olympics, but then she died back in the late 90s of cancer. But he would have these track meets, And then one time I was over at Becky's house and it was in the fall. And Bob says, "Hey, Loretta, you think we could train for a marathon?" And I looked at him. I said, "You know how far a marathon is? It's 200. I said, it's 26 miles, 285 yards, and 6.5 inches to be exact."
That's pretty exact.
I said, "I don't know if I really want to run a marathon." So me and Bob got our heads together. And I remember his wife was having kids. And she was pregnant. And here's me and Bob. And I said, "Okay, Bob, I'm going to try this." So me and Bob, it was the Harrisburg Marathon. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania was our first one. And we go up a couple weeks earlier and try to see where the course was. We were just guessing in our head. "I don't think they'll be running in town. So maybe they'll run around the Capitol." And then we start running down by where these railroad tracks was. Then we heard somebody shooting. And I looked at Bob. I said, "Man, I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah, I'm going to run faster now."
And it was in November. So people were starting to shoot the first week of November. So finally, the race came up. And then me and Bob ran it. My first race, I ran in 3 hours and 35 minutes. I saw Bob coming down the Longstown Road. He said, "Man, I quit. I said, "Come on, Bob, we can finish this." Then I ran into, I can see his name now. His dad owned the Bon Ton Stores. And here he is. He's just trucking. I said, "Come on, man, we're going to finish it." He says, "Man, I can't do it." I said, "My man, Bob's back there. Come on, you can finish this. You can finish." Tim Grumbacher. So all of a sudden, Tim Grumbacher, who's the son of Sam Grumbacher, who owned Bon Ton Stores, which started in New York, we start running. I said, "Come on, man, now let's walk fast. So me and Tim finishes. I finished first in 3 hours and 35 minutes. A couple of weeks later after that, I'm knocking on Bob's door. I say, "Hey, Bob, there's a marathon." He says, "Where at?" She said, "Man, I can't do it. My wife is about to have a baby." Said, "Come on, man, it's in Baltimore. It's not that far."
All of a sudden, you're a bad Becky influence.
And Bob is not running no marathon. So she looks at me and says, "Where's your coat?" I said, "I got my running stuff on." So she gives me his nylon jacket. They wore a lot of polyester nylon back then. So she gave me the jacket and I went to Baltimore and I ran that marathon.
Was this like you showed up at his door? Like you showed up at his door and it's like there's a marathon right now? Or this was
back in I ran the first one in Harrisburg. Mm-hmm. That was in November. And that next month there was one in the beginning of December down in Baltimore.
Okay. And you made it sound like she gave you a jacket and you just went right to the marathon.
She gave me a jacket.
Yeah.
And I had my have my entry fee, because then you could just enter right there. You paid a little more.
Cash up front.
Got the marathon and I ran that one. Then I got the marathon bug.
You got 26 marathons. In what span of time did you run 26 marathons?
Well, one year I ran 5 marathons. I ran Harrisburg, then I ran Baltimore, then we went over to Eastern Pennsylvania. I ran a race and I never forget my friend, Ben Heiser. He wins in his age group. They give him a belt buckle and a belt.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what.
I win the women's race overall and I got the belt buckle and no belt.
Not cool.
So then I end up running the George Washington Marathon and I end up running another one. And then I finished up with running Boston.
5 in 1 year finished with the Pinnacle Boston Marathon.
From November to April.
Was this 1982?
That was in 81, 82.
Because I have here that your personal best happened in Boston.
Yes.
Yeah. And you got a 303.
Well, you know, then it was weird because it's not like now you have a chip. You put a chip on your shoe. If you're 7 minutes back, that chip doesn't go off until you hit the starting line.
Right.
Well, back then, I had my watch and I had it set, and I was almost 8 minutes till I got to the starting line. Then they only had 6,000 runners. There was a cap, and you qualified. There was no special provisions. Like now you see these athletes from Special Olympics, they can run Boston in 6 hours and stuff like that. I qualified with the same time as any normal athlete qualified. Self-taught, no special shoes. So I get there, I'm looking at my rate, my watch, and I was like, it's almost 8 minutes to the starting line. So we run. So the first year I ran in 3 hours and 7 minutes. The second year, when they sent you a little card, it was just like a business, just a little bit bigger than a business card. They sent you this card and it had your regular time on and your estimated time. Yeah.
So results are a little bit loosey-goosey with that back then.
Yeah. Well, it took me 8 minutes to get to the starting line. And I ended up running like a, I don't know, 3:07 again. And they gave me a 3-minute allowance. That's like it took me 5 minutes.
Right, yeah. It was like way more than 3 minutes.
8 minutes to get to starting line. So we get home. We didn't know our time. And that was the same year that Greta Weitz ran and she got sick. She ate some chocolate. And she was destined to win the race then. She was from Norway and she was number one in the world. And it was near Easter and she got some chocolate and it made her sick. Because at the end of the race, she came up to congratulate me. And I'll never forget her walking up to me and says, Loretta, I said, how did you do? Because somebody knew somebody wanted me to meet her. And I was a Special Olympics athlete, the first ever to do a marathon. Self-trained, no special provisions. And I said, how did you do? She says, you beat me. I said, no, you won the race. She says, no, I got sick. She ate some candy and it made her sick. Hmm. She died a couple years ago. Hmm. But she was the number one marathoner at that time.
Yeah. And you happened to beat her that year because
and
she had some bad candy.
To come up and we were in this room to congratulate me and everything. I thought
that this notable awesome. Runner came to recognize you. Like, yep. Look at how far you had come, you know? And again, you were self-taught, you know, you didn't have a fancy coach or anything like that.
Didn't have no coaches. Now look at these athletes. They're running these marathons in 6 and 7 hours. God be with them because I don't think I could be out there that long.
I've done one.
I admire them, but they get all this prestige and they, you know, they aren't doing it in the times that I done it.
Right. Yeah.
With no coaching.
Yeah. Right.
It's me and Hollis, and then Hollis quit.
But it just shows the drive that you had, you know, the drive that you had from an early age and the push that you had from the right people at the right time.
Well, just like the karate teacher saying, this is not for women. You women need to be home taking care of the house.
You were not ready to accept that.
For like 28 years, 1971 to 1999. I'd moved out of the area and I couldn't get back into town. And you don't want to be walking at night outside. But I stuck with it all those years in the same way with running. Today, I still run. I don't run near as fast as I used to.
Let's talk about what you do now, because I think that's probably, you know, your story is a big inspiration and a lot of lessons from that around fighting for what you believe in. You know, having the drive to solve problems yourself when other people aren't going to solve them for you, making your own way and creating your own opportunities. Like that's what you had to do as you came up. And as a result, you have this like amazing resume, starting with the Special Olympics with 26 marathons. I have your bio in front of me. You were awarded the SB Arthur Ashe Award for Courage. When yes. did that happen?
That happened in 1996.
Amazing.
And I donated the award to a center, that Crispus Attucks Center, because there's a lot of young women. They had built a building and named it after me, the Loretta Claiborne Community Health Center. And I know there's a lot of women that have children. It's in a really underserved area. And my thing was to donate it to them for their use. They don't keep it, because I'm hoping that one day Special Olympics will have their own museum, and then I'll donate it to them, give it to them. But it sits in this center. And my thing is, if a woman from this area has a kid, to have faith in their kid, that their little kid will look up and see that and say, if she can do it, I can do it too.
Yes. And so you're paying it forward to the next generation in an area that needs it, that's underserved, as you said, that may not have the opportunities that many people do, just like you.
Yeah, we came from the projects and we didn't have a lot, but what we had a mother who was strong, and she believed in the morals, and she believed in the value of her children. But she also believed that, you know what? I want my kids to have what I don't have. I might won't be able to give them money. I might won't be able to give them a big house. They might won't have a car, but I want my kids to have more than I have. And that's what I think today with Special Olympics. I serve on the board of directors. I serve on, wear many hats. I speak in schools, but right now with the COVID going on, I do it mostly on the computer.
Like, right. Yes. But that allows you to reach even more people, probably, because you can get outside of your local community.
Yes. I don't travel by bus or anything because of COVID. When this stuff gets over, I mean, there are masks all over this house.
Yeah. You're well versed. Yeah. And
I go out the door, the mask goes out the door.
Yes. And that's smart.
I go to the YMCA Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and I start out with a spin class, 45 minutes to an hour. Then after that, we got like 5-minute break in between class, because the next class comes in and I start setting up the chairs for the silver sneakers. And then those are ladies and gentlemen who are older, but it's not the typical silver sneakers class. You're doing 22 minutes of solid aerobic exercise, standing up. And I remember we had one guy come in and says, "What's the point in having the chairs? You don't use them."
You're like, you get chairs the whole rest of your day.
That chair is there for you to balance. And like when they do certain exercises, like the lifting weights and stuff, that type of stuff over the head, you can actually get a sweat in this class. So I do that on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then, of course, I was running right before I got on this call.
Like literally, you shut up and you're like, I got my running clothes on. Like, I feel like that's the story of your life. You show up places with your
I get up. Clothes. This is how I dress.
Yeah.
I mean, I get
always ready to run.
I'm getting rid of suits right now, taking them to the community aid.
You don't wear them. You wear your running clothes, right?
I wear my running clothes. And when I start speaking again, I notice I watch people on TV and I watch these shows like Tamron Hall or whatever, the morning show. I watch what women are wearing, and nobody's wearing full suits anymore. And I figure, keep a couple of those, because I know in my situation, I might get called to the UN or I might get called to the White House. Then that's when you wear a suit.
Yeah. By the way, let's not just let that slide. I might get called to the UN. I might get called to the White House.
I never know, because I'm always out there advocating for better health for intellectual disability. Right now with this COVID situation, a lot of our athletes don't have the accessibility to the health.
Yeah. And so you're speaking to these notable audiences, world leaders, presidents,
yes,
the United Nations. You've spoken for Nelson Mandela, the Pope. you're not just speaking to your local community. You're actually speaking to influencers and world leaders, which I think is absolutely worth noting. Again,
and it's not about me. It's about
the message.
Around this world where there's hardly anything, and we just going back to the woman thing. Mm-hmm. People, they think people with intellectual disability shouldn't be paid as much. There are still people. I have friends who are still working in shelter workshops and getting paid $20 every 2 weeks. Why?
Yeah,
and that's what my whole fight is. I just spoke to Hershey candies, the people who make the Hershey candy bars and the kisses. Mm-hmm. I just spoke to their company.
Yeah. And so, you just
want to reach out.
it's amazing. Again, you've been advocating since you were young. I feel you're just a lifelong advocate. You've been advocating for people with intellectual disabilities, for women, for people who are older now, and standing up for people who may not be able to stand up for themselves. And you're changing the world.
Somewhere along the line, somebody did the same thing for me.
Yeah.
I was a kid. I never forget it. My mom had 7 of us living. There was really 9, 2 didn't make it. And my mother didn't have a lot. And one night, it was near Christmas. She says, oh, I wish I could just have Christmas for my kids. And back in the 60s, you know, you lived in the project, a knock came on the door. And it was a man there. And they were from some church. He says, I was chosen in church to be your secret Santa. And my mother looked at this man. And, you know, being Black and the way she was raised, Blacks wasn't treated well. She went to an all-Black school. She didn't have it. Put it this way. She didn't have a pretty life growing up because of the color of her skin. So the man came in and talked to her. And not only did he become her secret Santa, just like the church had it just for that year, every year, Mr. Dykus would come and each of us kids, when it was our birthday, he worked at Yorktown Ice Cream. He would bring a big thing of ice cream to our house and it would be in hot ice and he would do little tricks with the hot ice so us kids could see. But he wanted to be more than just that one night thing for just for Christmas. Every one of us, when our birthdays came up, he had ice cream, he had cake, and he would have maybe a $5 bill because that was big in the 60s. So this man didn't have that. I mean, we didn't have stuff. But here was this man that could have said, okay, I did my little Secret Santa, I'm done. But he continued it. And in 1972, when I made it to go to the games, him and another different family took us under their wings. And both of those families, I'll never forget it. They did for us all. When I graduated from high school, Mrs. Strine bought me a suitcase because she found out that I was going to go on to the international games. And it wasn't World Games. It was the National Games, National Special Olympics Games. Not huge like it is now. World, international, went from National Special Olympics Games to International Special Olympics Games, and now to World Games with 190-some countries. I went out to UCLA, and she bought me a suitcase so I could have a bag, a nice bag, when I went on to the games.
So, yeah, you've never forgotten.
People like that, yeah. I've never forgotten.
The people who showed up for you at the right times to help you elevate your life. And now that's how you're paying it back or paying it forward, is to continue, because people still need that kind of help.
And I think about a man by the name of Bob Marley. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
I've heard of him. Yes.
He sings a song called Pass It On. And in that song, the chorus is, live for yourself, you'll live in vain. If you live for others, you'll live again. In the kingdom of Jah, which just means God, in the kingdom of God, you shall reign. So pass it on. And that's what I do now.
That's what you do. That's amazing. That's amazing. So it seems like you've chosen to live a life of service.
And I just give back.
Yeah, you keep giving back, which is amazing. So as we get ready to wrap up, if people want to know more about your story or how to learn more about you, because we've touched on a number of things, but I feel like we could talk for a long time and there's so much more. How could people learn more about you?
They could probably go on the website to LorettaClaiborne.com mm-hmm. or through specialolympics.org.
Yeah. And if
better to go on the website.
Yeah. And of course, that's a cause that's very important to you as someone who's been involved with the Special Olympics since 1970. If you're looking for something to support, that's a great way to continue to pay it forward that anybody can do. So it's definitely worth checking out. as we finish, I ask this question to all my guests, and I'm very curious about your answer. It kind of puts people on the spot, but I feel like you might be ready for this. So I would love to know if you have one parting piece of wisdom that you would like to share with our listeners today, what would that be?
One parting piece of wisdom I have for everyone is to keep your faith, even when times are hard, and to keep moving. And don't let nobody tell you just because you're a seasoned athlete that you can't do this and you can't do that. Just remember, the more you move, the better off you'll be.
Amen to that. And that's very reflective of your whole life story. Don't let anyone tell you what you can or cannot do. And always keep moving because it's going to make your life better at any age.
And age is just a way of thinking.
Age is just a way of thinking. As we're kind of going back to the beginning of the interview. Yeah, you're 68, but you don't feel it. So, you know, I feel like your life has led you to a place of feeling ageless.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But, you know, you're up, you're moving all the time. You may not be running marathons as much anymore, but you still love running.
No, I don't do the marathons anymore, but I have plenty to do. Like Tuesday night, I go to Refit with my friend, Miss Becky, who was pregnant, and I knocked on the door.
This is the same friend.
We're still friends.
That's so great. I love that.
And I was over her house last night.
That's so, it's like, you know, your stories that you've told, your recall for names is so impressive to me because I don't have that. But you remember every single person who touched your life in different ways throughout your entire life, all, you know, 68 years of life. And it's just so impressive to me, but it just shows what an effect everybody has had on you and how that has made you into the person you are today, out there making a difference in a lot of different ways for a lot of different people, young, older, different races, women, all of that. So thank you.
It's all about the human being.
It's all about the human being. So thank you for doing the work that you do. And Loretta, thank you for taking the time and coming on to share your story on the Seasoned Athlete Podcast.
Yes. And just remember, age is just a way of thinking. It's not a number.
That's right.
Seasoned athletes, if you've fallen out of your fitness routine and the idea of jumping back in feels as daunting as putting together a work presentation the night before you have to present it, I have a fun freebie for you. Introducing the Off the Couch Starter Pack. Inside this free download, you'll find 6 days of strategically programmed workouts and recovery sessions for any fitness level, all designed to get you up, get you moving, and get you excited about working out again. I paired every workout and recovery session with its own hand-curated Spotify playlist to ensure that you're moving with joy every step of the way. Because that, my friend, is how you get fired up to get back into fitness again. So, if you're looking for a way to open that door that's been closed for far too long, and to do it in a way that's simple, effective, and fun, download my free Off the Couch Starter Pack now through the link in the show notes or at robinleggett.com/buycouch.